You're listening to the Maryland Baseball Network podcast. Here are your hosts, Nathan Schwartz and Jack Suzanin.
Welcome to episode 98 of the Maryland Baseball Network podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Nathan Schwartz, joined by my other co-host, Jack Suzanin.
I don't think you've ever done an intro like that.
I like it. Yeah, it was good.
We'll toy with some more intros.
Wanted to switch it up a little bit. We always keep talking about it at the top, but getting one step closer to 100. We've got some good ideas brewing right now of what we might do when we get to triple digits, but right now we've got episode 98. Overall, a nail-biting couple of days for the Dirty Terps. Series win in Charlotte, a come-from-behind win up in Emmitsburg on Tuesday, and what do you know? One more weekend to go before we get to conference play.
Yeah, it was just such a weird week of Maryland baseball. I'm not gonna lie to you. Obviously, the schedule changes in Charlotte were the start of that weird week. The series as a whole went well, I would say, especially obviously the doubleheader on Sunday, and then the Mount St. Mary's game was again just a weird game. But hey, Terps win 3 out of 4, and I don't think anyone will ever complain with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't complain about 3 and 4, up to 41 in the RPI.
They were at like 35 yesterday before the Mount St. Mary's game, which no matter what they did, they were going
to
fall.
Right. So let's go back to Friday night, a game that Maryland fans will probably want to forget for the most part. It started out really ugly. Go down 3-0 in the bottom of the first. Kenny Lippman can't even escape the inning, and he only goes a third of it. And he walked 4, he hit a batter. He was credited with the loss, gave up 3 earned runs, all 3 in that first inning. Tristan Sarcone had to come in. He got roughed up a little bit in the third inning, got credited all 4 runs that Charlotte scored in that third inning. And then Duke McCarron was credited with the other 2 in the fourth, and he didn't record an out either. So Maryland was down 9-0 in this game, and it looked like it was going to be pretty ugly, get out of hand. And for the most part, it was out of hand until that 5 spot in the 6th.
Yeah, and again, credit to the Terps for, you know, keeping on fighting in this one. Obviously, that start did not go the way anyone wanted or anticipated. And this isn't the pitcher Kenny Lippman is. It was a bad outing. It's going to happen. You know, Logan Koster's probably going to have a bad outing at some point this year. Like, it's baseball. Stuff's going to happen. But credit to Swope for realizing that it wasn't Kenny's best day and, you know, pulling the plug on him before it got too out of hand. Unfortunately, Sarcone and McCarron couldn't lift him up. But I want to credit Evan Smith and Andrew Johnson because they both came in, 2 lefties. Smith's last outing, I believe, I could be wrong on this, was the Washington game.
I think you're right there.
Where he gave up the go-ahead homer, which that ruins any pitcher's confidence, especially a freshman making his like second appearance in college. So for him to have the mental toughness to come in and go in at, 2 innings, 1 hit, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, it's so good to see for Evan Smith. And then Andrew Johnson comes in, who we haven't seen all year. Which I think was kind of surprising.
I was extremely shocked that he didn't get in at all in those first couple of weekends.
But he pitched really, really well. 3 innings, no hits, no runs, 2 walks, no strikeouts. Got the job done. And again, just having that depth. Obviously, the top end didn't work out. But that's okay. Again, those nights will happen. You just got to flush them and move on.
Yeah, and in that 5-run 6th inning where Maryland started to claw back, Jordan Crosland hits his first career home run, and we'll actually have more with Jordan later in this episode. Our Aaron Arnstein was able to sit down with Jordan ahead of the Charlotte series, or in the middle of it, I think, on that Saturday off day. So you'll hear Jordan's thoughts on the home run, how the season's gone so far, and learn a little bit more about him personally, but that really couldn't have come at a better time for Maryland needing to get back into the game, sort of really mounted that mini comeback effort in the middle of that game. Of course, it didn't wind up becoming a pivotal moment in the game, which led to a win, of course, because you don't score any more runs after that. But it's good to see Jordan get more at-bats and make the most of them with that homer.
He's a really talented player. He's an awesome guy to be around. He's going to be one that's fun to root for. And you'll hear that in his interview. Again, just an incredible person. And it's been coming for him. He hadn't had the best start to the season, hadn't been playing a ton. But, you know, this guy is going to be a really, really, really good player for this Maryland team for many years.
Yeah, and it's exciting. The more he gets in, the more he's going to succeed. And I'm going to pull up his season numbers here. But he's been on a tear lately when he's been able to get into the game. He was 1-for-4, that one hit being the home run on Friday night. My website would load. Goodness
gracious.
Yeah,
I know. I'm having trouble with the Wi-Fi, too. It's taking a while. But here, I think I got it. Yeah, so Crossland, he's started in 5 games. He's played in a couple more than that. Again, if it'll load. 9 games he's played, and he's hitting .350, which is really good, obviously.
That'll play.
7-for-20. The homer, those 3 RBIs on that homer are his only RBIs of the year, but that's okay. Again, this is a guy who's really talented. Maybe striking out a bit much, but, like, who cares? He's, you know, he's hitting .350. That'll play. Give up a couple strikeouts if you're hitting .350.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's not the most sustainable, but, hey, you never know.
Yeah, it was Jacob Orr getting a lot of starts at the DH spot or in the outfield at the beginning of the season. Recently, he's taken a step back out of the starting lineup, and there's been a bit more of a rotation between Eddie Hakopian out in the outfield, Braden Martin in right, Jordan Crossland getting some opportunities. Ben Nardi started a couple games for Maryland here in the last couple weeks. So if this is a cycle that continues to go and Crossland makes the most of his opportunities, something Ian Petrutz did
freshman
year.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
It was that revolving door. There was Zach Martin, Sean Lane, Ian Petrutz, a bunch of other guys.
Orr, I think, was involved.
Yeah, Jacob Orr was in there, too. And eventually, Ian was hitting the ball well enough to where he became the everyday designated hitter towards the end of the season. And then that led to him being in the top of the lineup last year before transferring to Alabama, where he's actually having a pretty good season.
He is, yeah.
Down in Tuscaloosa. I think he's hitting just over .300 so far.
Good for him.
But besides the point, if Jordan Crossland continues to perform at this level, I think he could get a lot more playing time as the season goes on.
Obviously. I mean, if you're hitting .350, you're not going to get taken out of the lineup too much. And Crossland is a guy, obviously, limited playing time, but he's shown that he can play. He's shown he can hit this level. And he's going to be, and again, a guy this year that's going to be a big contributor, but these next couple years are going to be so exciting with him on this team.
And on the flip side of this loss on Friday, you have the rainout on Saturday. And this is something that Maryland baseball has not done a whole lot since we've been here, and that's play doubleheaders. I can definitely see why doubleheaders are not something you want to do. I mean, it's 16 or 18 innings of baseball in one day. It's not fun. Going back to playing them myself, I hated doubleheaders, especially as a catcher if I had to do both.
That would have been brutal.
But they played 2. The second game was only the 7 innings, so you get a little bit of a break there. But in the first game, I want to talk about the power difference, because last week we talked about how they were only averaging about 1 homer a game. They were finding different ways to score runs, and they're still winning. In this game, however, in game 1 of the doubleheader, they hit 5 homers and win 13-2. And this is the Maryland offense that we had become accustomed to. You had Chris Hakopian hitting 2 homers, Eddie hitting a home run, Elijah hitting home run, both of those guys hitting their first home runs of the year. And then Alex Clarko somehow sneaks one out of left center field in the 9th inning on what looked like a routine fly ball off the bat. But 5 homers in one game, that is the Maryland offense that we know and love.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this is, again, what we've become accustomed to. I think we're fortunate to have become accustomed to it over the last couple years. But yeah, just such a talented team. This team can hit. Elijah, Eddie, you knew they were going to break off the homerless drought that they've had. It was going to happen. And you hope and you think that this will just lead to more and more.
Yeah, absolutely. 8 of the 9 starters for Maryland get a hit in this one. Brayden Martin was the only one to not get a hit, but he walked 3 times. So I love looking at the box score and seeing something like that to where everybody's getting on base at least once. Most of these guys got on multiple times. Chris Akopian got on base 4 times in this one. He was 3 for 4 with those 2 homers, 4 RBIs, and a walk. Can't have a much better day at the plate for a true freshman. It was the first time that both the Akopian brothers homered in the same game. Got the Steven Schock shout out on Twitter for that. And this was just a great way to start the day. You get the series back to even and make it a winner take all in game 2.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they definitely did.
They absolutely did. One thing before we talk about it, we got to mention this pitching again. Yeah. Logan Koster, as we've mentioned all season long, has just been dominant. He goes 6 innings, 5 hits, only 2 earned runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, and those strikeout numbers continue to rise. He's getting more swings and misses with not only the fastball but all that sharp breaking stuff he has. He's now 4-0 on the season. All 4 of his starts have resulted in Maryland victories. And then Nate Haverthier, man, if you just take away that VCU game, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but absolutely sensational. 3 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 2 walks in this one. He gets his 2nd save of the season. And that's where that starting experience comes out to help him. He's going to be able to go the distance. And in a game where Koster goes 6 and you have 7 more innings of baseball to play after the conclusion of this game, to have Haverthier just finish the game off for you with little to no pressure on him, having such a big lead late in that game was crucial.
Well, the counterpoint is there was a little bit of pressure. They were only up 6-2 when he came in because they did so much of their damage in the 8th and 9th innings. So it's not like, I don't know if they were expecting necessarily to use Haverthier for the entire 3. Like, they might have needed to go with Barrier or Walsh or French or whoever. But again, the ability to have that length out of the bullpen is so important. We've now seen it with multiple guys on this team. I mean, Logan Barrier pitched 4 innings of the 2nd leg of the doubleheader, which we'll get into. But again, just so, so important that these guys are able to go for so long. And Haverthier's been great. I think he's probably been the biggest surprise of the year for many Maryland fans.
So,
we were told before the year, like, hey, this is a new Nate Haverthier. Like, he's really, you know, picked up his stuff. He's really good. And we're like, okay, sure, like, let's see it. Well, we've seen it now. And it's been multiple appearances where he's been legit.
Yeah, if you take away the VCU game, he's gone 9 innings. And remember, he didn't record an out in that VCU game. So all 3 of his runs that he's given up came in that horrible 7th inning. So he's gone 9 innings, only 6 hits, 4 walks, and 5 strikeouts, if you exclude the VCU performance. You actually cannot get much better than that. You actually cannot get much better than that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, so much credit to Nate. He's put in so much work to get here and to get to this point. You know, he's a guy that wants to be a starting pitcher. Obviously, that's not the role he's in this year, but he's making the most of the role he's in. I don't expect him to become a starter at any point this year. Crazier things have happened. But if they need him to, they can. But he's such a valuable piece out of this bullpen.
And yeah, if you need him to spot start, maybe in a tournament setting, he's there. If you need 1 out, he's there. If you need 3 innings, he's there. He's so versatile as a pitcher. And it's just great to see him get these extended experiences and to be playing well with them.
Yeah, and again, it's these extended outings are so important. Maryland only used 4 pitchers in the doubleheader overall, which is like
chef's kiss.
Obviously, the second game was only 7 innings, but still, that's a lot of baseball you're playing. And the fact that you only need 4 pitchers. Charlotte used 8 pitchers. Like, again, this is so good and such a difference from what we've seen in the past couple years. It's huge. We can't stress enough how big it is for this team. It's, I don't want to say the sole reason, but it's one of the reasons that they're 13-4.
Yeah, even though like the competition hasn't been as stiff as it was last year, where you had to go through the gauntlet of Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, Hawaii was a really good team, and you play those other couple series before conference play. This year, it hasn't been the biggest of names other than that Pitt game, and they're pretty high up in the RPI, Washington as well.
They didn't do us much favors this weekend.
No. Unfortunately. But before the weekend,
Let's forget this weekend happened from the Pitt Panthers side of things. But
yeah.
Who did they draw? I know they went – they got swept by some – oh, it was UNC. They got swept by, which –
I think they're UNC's fourth in the RPI right now, so that actually might not hurt.
And they lost all the games. They lost 2-1, 7-4, and 6-5 in 10 innings.
All close,
but it would have been nice to have one of those.
It would have been nice to sneak one, absolutely. But back to what I was saying, yeah. They're still 13-4.
Exactly.
Like, you got to win these games if you're going to want a chance to get in that large bid if you don't win the Big Ten tournament. Moving on to game two of the doubleheader, and this one was extremely close. It was 2-1 Charlotte for a majority of the middle part of the game. They scored both their two runs in the bottom of the fourth. It's 2-1 Charlotte going into the top of the sixth, and that's when Kevin Keister hits a game-tying RBI double to right center, and then Elijah Lambrose sneaks one up the middle with an RBI single. He's been stellar at the plate. Had a bit of some struggles on Tuesday with four strikeouts, but other than that, one of the top hitters on the team in terms of average. We mentioned he got that first homer of the year in game one. And this is the ultimate way to fight back. And part of the theme of the weekend was gritty performances and never being out of the game. 9-0 on Friday, you're down. You come back and make it a 4-run game. The game one of the doubleheader, you're winning the whole time, but it's pretty close for most of that game, and then you come away with a double-digit win in the end. And then game two of the doubleheader, you're losing for really high-impact innings of the game, and then you're able to get some big hits and clutch moments when you needed it in the sixth inning.
Yeah, and again, these last two games have been so similar, the Mount St. Mary's game and the last Charlotte game, where didn't go their way for a lot of it, and they really needed to just grind and grind and grind, and that's what this team can do. They can have – that's what's so funny about this doubleheader is they have the huge power display, hit five homers, score, 13 runs? What did they score?
13.
Yeah, 13 runs, and then you have a game where you win it 3-2 because your pitching was stellar. McManus had a much better start. Obviously, it wasn't a perfect start by any means, but McManus has a good start. Barrier was phenomenal out of the pen. And again, just never quit, grind it out mentality. It's not going to come easy at all times. But that sixth inning, starts with a Chris Hacopian double. Then Colarco strikes out. You face a little bit of adversity there. Keister pokes one into right. Scores Chris. Lambrose, single. Terps lead. Just like that. And it's... when they seem down and out, this team is never down and out of games.
Never.
And that's probably the best quality you can have as a baseball team, because there are going to be games where it's going to be a grind. I think the Texas A&M and Corpus Christi game, which is a game they probably needed to win, was such a grind for them. But they just keep fighting. They keep clawing. They understand, not every inning is going to be their inning. But when they have their inning, they're ready to pounce. And again, this team... You run out of words to describe just the grit they have. The cardiac Terps, baby.
Cardiac Terps, comeback Terps, whatever you want to call it. It speaks so much to the culture of Maryland baseball,
The
leadership of the players, and the coaching. And what a great job that Coach Swope and this entire coaching staff has done in only the short time that they've had with this group. I mean, of course, they've been with them all, and they talked to them in the offseason, and some guys have been here previously, but for the most part, these are guys that got to College Park in September and were never playing with one another in this setting, and then they're only a third of the way through the regular season, and they've got 13 wins and continuously come back from being behind and make games that didn't seem to be in their favor close and games that were close pointed in their direction.
Yeah, and again... We're starting to run out of words to describe the talent of this team.
It's the same story.
We're saying the same thing every week, And if we're saying the same thing every week, we're starting to discover this team's identity of just never quitting, you know, keeping on chugging and winning games.
I'll tell you, you mentioned something about Logan Barrier where he was able to finish the game. He goes four innings, only gives up one hit, and strikes out five. He only threw 50 pitches in those four innings. If this game was a nine-inning game,
he could have gone the whole way.
He's probably going to finish the game, honestly, and he has the experience as a Friday night starter at Longwood. But another guy that you just know can come in and get those clutch outs, just like Haberthier has most of the season.
Yeah, I don't know if Maryland fans have like a bullpen trust ranking, because I know as a Phillies fan, I like to make my bullpen trust rankings. Usually with the Phillies, they're like, I don't trust any of them. But with this Maryland team, I'd put Logan Barrier right at the top of the list.
Has to be, right?
You just know what you're going to get. He's so consistent, so solid. I mean, four innings of one-hit ball against a Charlotte team that was a regional team last year.
Right, yeah.
Like, you cannot ask for anything else. Like, McManus was not great, but, like, in a seven-inning game, three innings of four-hit, two-run ball, I'm not going to complain too much about that.
He's still settling in. Yeah, second career
exactly.
Start, first one on the road.
And he got better from his first start, and that's, I think, what you're going to be looking for, that continued progression from him and from every, you know, player on this team, is that continued progression. But his first start against Bryant, Joey's, did not go well. And to, you know, again, not a perfect start by any means, but the fact that he can go three innings in a seven-inning game, that's, again, just turn it over to Barrier and let him go.
Barrier's gone at least two innings in each of his five appearances. He's gone two innings twice and 3 2/3 the other time. Only giving up three runs. ERA right now sitting at 172.
That's so good.
And he's only walked one batter. And that was the season opener at Georgia Southern.
That's just like, we've had so much trouble with this team, with the walks in the past. And we're still having, you know, our problems here and there. But like, man, it's so good. Just so good to read that stat line for a reliever. Like an ERA under two. He's not walking guys. He's not giving up runs. He's not letting guys get on base. It's such a welcome sight for this team.
Having a Dave Falco-like performance that he did last year.
Especially late down the season, that Falco performance. Yeah. He had some rough outings. I think it was it UCF? No, that was Nigel
at UCF. Got
and
touched up in Ole Miss a little bit. It was all at the beginning of the year.
Exactly.
Out of conference play. And then once conference play hit, and he was
an animal.
Full throttle and...
How's he doing at Wake?
I actually looked at this earlier. It's not the best.
Really?
I think he's thrown like nine innings and it's ERA in the upper sevens. But same thing to where it was a couple inflated performances at this point in the season that just really shoot up your ERA. I remember his ERA last year was in the double digits for a good bit of the opening part of the season because it was five runs
or four runs
and in a third of an inning.
But then a lot of performances like he did the entire Big Ten tournament where he's just, you know, you can't hit him.
Right, exactly. So that does it for what we have on the Charlotte series. Maryland wins the series after
I do want to say one thing on
opening.
Charlotte. I saw this on Twitter and sort of heard it on the broadcast. The Maryland fans down there, I know there were like some home run club outings. Kudos to you guys. Great job if any of you are listening. Fantastic crowd. Love seeing the Terps, you know, do it big on the road.
Absolutely not something that happens a whole lot with Maryland baseball on the road. So to just have that support, even not playing that game on Saturday and having to be at the ballpark for 6, 7, 8 hours on Sunday and then, of course, make the trek back to the DMV after the game. I know that was a long ride for the guys and Aaron coming back from Charlotte.
Aaron said he's caught up on sleep, though. I talked to him yesterday. He's all good.
Yeah, they didn't get back till in the really early hours in the morning. But it's all better when you get that series win after the doubleheader sweep. But then they didn't have much time before they had to hop back on a bus and go up to Emmitsburg, where, man, they really gave us something to worry about for a majority of that game, Jack.
They didn't give us something to watch, that's for sure.
Did not give us something to watch. But that's what we're here for. That is exactly what
the Maryland Baseball
Network is designed for.
So, again, thank you to everyone who tuned in to our broadcast for that. Obviously, we know it wasn't necessarily the first choice of people that day, but, you know, the situation was where there was no broadcast, but we're there for you.
We're season high in listeners on Tuesday. As always, we appreciate you guys tuning in so much. It means the world to us. And
tuned in for a pretty good Ryan Van Buren start.
Absolutely. He goes five innings, and that's been a common denominator, right? Van Buren's going to give you four or five or six every time he goes out there. The only run he gave up, I believe, was a home run.
It was
in the first inning.
Apparently, it was a moonshot. I didn't see it, obviously.
Yeah, apparently.
Reitman said it was a moonshot, so I'm going to stick with what Ben said.
We're all going off what we got here in terms of box scores.
If anyone
and
was
all
there
that.
And can confirm that it was, I mean, Ben says it was, but if we have additional people that can confirm it was a moonshot, please do.
Second batter of the game for Mount St. Mary's. Seeker hits a homer to right. And then it was, we were sitting in class, Jack, and it was just 1-0. Nothing going on offensively. Then the Mount adds another run in the sixth, and we were like, oh no.
Yeah,
oh, no.
We were sort of looking at each other after every inning during class, and we're like, all right, we pay attention in class. Don't worry. Let's get this out. We do pay attention in class, but, you know, we keep an eye on proceedings. And we were sort of like looking at each other like, are we going to score this game? Because this is a team. How many runs did they score against Mount St. Mary's the first game? I forget. It was a lot, though.
14.
Exactly. 14. So it's like we scored 14 runs off this team, you know, 3 weeks ago. Why are we not scoring now? But again, grind it out, you know, don't try and force anything, and you get guys on base, bring them around. And obviously the on base stuff was a bit of a trouble early in the game, but just grind it out, don't let that beat you up. And Braden Martin starts the party with an RBI single. Eddie hits in the double play, which brings home a run, and then so that tied the game up. But then they faced the adversity. Melendez gives up the 2-run single. But again, and you think at that point, you're like, oh my goodness, like we just came back and now after being quiet all day offensively, we got to go and score some more runs. Enter Sam Honar, RBI single, down one run. And then in the ninth inning, luck was on their side, got a couple wild pitches, some walks, some errors.
The second baseman comes in to pitch.
Yeah.
JT Landwehr, who was hitting in the three spot, went 1-for-4 in the day, finished the day on the mound and got credited with the loss. A little funky twist.
Yeah, but again, you know, sometimes you need luck on your side in baseball, and the Terps are a team that deserves to be lucky because, again, this is a talented team that knows how to grind out wins, and this was a game as unfortunate as it is. Like, they needed to win it.
Had to. Mount St. Mary's, as it currently stands, as we're recording, 289th in RPI, and just so you're aware, if you didn't know, there are 305 teams that are in the RPI. So losing to a team that is 16 spots away from dead last in all of collegiate baseball, at least at the Division I level, would have been catastrophic to Maryland's RPI.
And we, if you listened last week, you heard we are not a fan of RPI on this podcast. This is not an RPI fan page or fan podcast, however you want to say it. But it's important. As much as it's annoying that it's important, it's important. And Maryland, you know, Charlotte had a good RPI coming into the week. They played some really good teams, and Maryland wins a series against them, and their RPI flies up to 35, of course, before dropping. They beat a team, and their RPI dropped 6 spots. They're now at 41 as of recording on Wednesday. You'll hear this on Thursday. But yeah, this is a Maryland team where the RPI is going to be fine. Should this team continue to win games? The only concern is the Big Ten's not great, and it's been a rough start to the year for the Big Ten. Nebraska's had a good year. Maryland's had a good year. I think Purdue's doing all right. Purdue's doing pretty well. Rutgers has had an okay start. Other than that, it's not been great. Your favorites have not been great. Indiana's not been good. Iowa's not been good. Ohio State's not been great. Michigan hasn't been great, you know. And, you know, as much as we're going to want these teams to lose as Big Ten season starts, unfortunately we need them to win now, and they're not helping us out. But that means the Nebraska series, currently third in RPI, which will drop, obviously, you would think, a little bit, that Nebraska series is going to be so critical. If we go and beat a team on the road in a series, if we take 2 out of 3, hypothetically, a team that, let's just assume they're going to be like top 20 in RPI when the Terps go out to Nebraska, that's going to be so important. It's going to be so important. And even like a midweek game against James Madison, who is currently 10th in RPI. That's going to be important. They're 10th because their opening series of the year was against Arkansas, who I believe is first. Yeah.
And they won a game.
Exactly. And they won a game. So, yeah, this is going to be some critical. The James Madison games and the Nebraska games are the ones you think of off the top of your head. I mean, obviously every game's important. But if you want to really boost your RPI, those are going to be the ones you're going to want to look at.
Yeah, but bottom line, Maryland does not drop to Mount St. Mary's. They come back again. They were down 4-2 going into the 8th, wind up winning 6-4, and now gear up for this series in Portland. I'll be out in the Northwest for that one. Cross-country flight. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Yeah, you got to report back on the lovely sights of Portland, Oregon.
Of course. Absolutely, I will. I'll try to take some pictures while I'm out there. Top 100 in RPI is the Portland Pilots.
Great mascot, by the way, Portland Pilots.
Yeah, love the alliteration right there. Don't know a whole lot about them right now, honestly. I still got to do my research on the team. But another series for Maryland where if you can just take 2 out of 3, you got to be feeling pretty good considering you're going to be on the tail end of a 7-game road trip, and then you come back to College Park for that JMU midweek and the Big Ten opener against Michigan State.
Oregon, Portland just beat Oregon 15-5 there. At Oregon in Eugene. So
one thing I did notice, I did get a chance to look at the schedule for Portland. This will be their first home game of the year. They have played all road games up until this point.
Wow.
Road series, whether it's been a tournament or just going to another school to play. So this game on Friday night will be their first home game of the season. Just a little fun tidbit about this series.
They're also playing 2 weeks after this weekend. They play Mount St. Mary's in a series.
I saw that.
What? Huh?
So not only is Maryland making the cross-country trek to Portland, but Mount St. Mary's is making the cross-country trek. So love just playing Maryland teams in March.
Best college baseball state in the country, baby.
You know. Woo! All right.
Should probably calm down a little bit there.
A little bit.
That's okay.
I think the Carolinas might have us beat.
Yeah.
And speaking of the Carolinas and just midweek baseball overall, there was some madness, craziness, whatever you want to call it, going on Tuesday night. Of course, this will come out after the Wednesday game, so we won't know what will happen there with some midweeks. But I'm just going to start rattling them off. Ryder, who had only won one game previously, beats Duke on the road 6-2 after Duke had just taken 2-3 in Wake Forest.
And who was Ryder's catcher last year?
You tell me.
Socrates Bardotzos,
baby. Oh, my gosh.
Sorry. We'll continue our midweek conversation in a second. But, yes, thank you to all who voted on Twitter, especially if you voted for my team, the winning team.
You got 62% of the vote.
I'll take it. You know, I'll take it. I feel like I deserve more. Not to toot my own horn.
We both had good teams, but I think the Bardotzos one just gave you so much more, like – If you just love a crazy name and you saw Socrates Bardotzos, you were gonna get a vote there.
Yeah.
I think people that voted for me just liked how mine were simple, but also like they were kind of funky. And then you got a lot of the crotch felt one was also good.
Popular.
But yeah, back to
midweek baseball. Sorry, I just had to toot my own horn for a second.
Back to midweek baseball. So Ryder beats Duke. Florida State, who there's been a lot of controversy on social media about whether they should be included in the D1 baseball poll. Kendall Rogers and the boys have refused to put them in, but now they're probably going to have to after the Seminoles defeat Florida, number 8 Florida, that is, on the road on Tuesday.
Yeah, I don't care who you play. If you're undefeated, you're undefeated.
Right, exactly.
Rank them. At this point in the season, if you were undefeated,
put them in.
Put them in the poll.
UNC Greensboro beats NC State 18-3. NC State ranked number 13 right now.
Was it Greensboro that beat Wake too?
Yes. So that UNC Greensboro has defeated Wake, number one Wake Forest, and number 13 NC State. Given they beat Wake while they were at home, they defeat NC State in Raleigh.
And I guess it's time to talk about Wake.
And Wake drops another midweek.
After dropping a series to Duke at home,
they have to go to Coastal, and they give up 17 runs to Coastal Carolina. Given that's Coastal Carolina 16th in the country.
Coastal's really good, but
really good team, top 20 midweek. Anything can happen, but to give up 17, man.
I'm concerned about this Wake team because they're supposed to be really good. You have Josh Hartle on Friday night, who's been pretty good. Obviously struggled against Duke. You have Chase Burns on Saturday. After that, yikes.
Yeah.
It's yikes so far.
You don't have Brett Louder.
This is a program that's built on pitching. In their last two games, they've given up 10 runs and 17 runs.
Yeah.
Which is not what they're looking to do down there in Winston-Salem. But, hey, if that means the Terps avoid a trip to Winston-Salem, that means good for us because I do not want to go there again. Just because not even the fact that I don't want to play Wake Forest again. I just don't want to go there again.
Number four Texas A&M only beats Sam Houston 9-8, but that was on a walk-off walk.
They're 17-0
in the bottom of the ninth,
or whatever however many wins they have. They're such a good team. They could win it all.
Yeah. Alabama loses to Southern Miss. Alabama's ranked number 14 right now.
Southern Miss is a good team. No need to freak out if you're Rob Vaughn right now.
Just looking through. TCU beats Dallas Baptist in a top 20 matchup in Dallas.
I feel like all the midweek games have been just so good this year. Like we've had so many just really like good team on good team midweek games.
Yeah, there's been so many good ones. And that's just the way it is. Like I told you, a lot of those Carolina's teams, they're so close to one another, they can just beat up on one another in these kind
of
midweek scenarios.
But even like Iowa playing Georgia.
Iowa,
I think Iowa had a series against Jacksonville State, and they're like, well, if we're down here, might as well just – I think they were probably around spring break this week, I would assume. Might as well go play Georgia. Why not?
That's probably what's going to start happening with these Big Ten teams when they've got to go cross-country to play the USCs, the Oregons, the Washingtons.
Yeah.
You're going to have to pair that. You're probably going to have to play two of those teams back-to-back, and then – if you're going to stay there that whole time, you got to play a midweek somewhere in that range. Maybe you play two midweeks just to get another game in, and you play maybe a team like UC Irvine, maybe UC Santa Barbara, San Diego, something like that. I expect that down the line.
I mean, it'll be a logistic nightmare for us, but
not only us in Maryland, but that goes for every Big Ten team, because as you all know, there's no Big Ten team close to California, not even remotely close. Especially those of us on the East Coast. So, I don't think there was any other crazy midweek games. Just to keep up with teams Maryland has already played. Bryant got smoked at home. UMBC beat Towson. Maryland plays both of those teams this year.
Georgia Southern beat a Kennesaw State team that is really high in RPI.
That's huge for Maryland's RPI, actually.
Yeah,
because Kennesaw State is
13.
Georgia Southern's in the 50s.
Here come the Terps, ladies and gentlemen.
And this is all based on WarrenNolan.com. At least I like to look at the D1 baseball RPI when that comes out. It's overall pretty much the same. But maybe now that we're using Warren Nolan, I might just use that all the time now just to sake.
That's just the website I use for everything. It's easy to navigate.
Exactly. Is that all we got on midweek baseball?
I think so. Yeah. I can't think of anything else. Terps won.
Terps won. Took 3 of 4 throughout the week. Won the series in Charlotte. Beat Mount St. Mary's in the final of the two matchups in the season between the two. Talk some RPI a little bit. Talk some midweek baseball. I think it's about that time. We handed over to Aaron Arnstein in his exclusive interview with Maryland freshman outfielder Jordan Crossland.
I'm here with freshman from the Terps, Jordan Crossland. And Jordan, thanks so much for hopping on. Really appreciate it. We're down here in Charlotte right now. And of course, we got to start with the big news of your first career home run in college on Friday. I'm going to play the call that we had on MBN, that I had on MBN. And hopefully everybody listening will get to hear it if they haven't already.
One ball, one strike, and the pitch. That's smoked out to left field. Bing going back at the track, at the wall, and it's gone! Jordan Crossland, his first home run as a Terp, and it comes in a big way. You want to talk about a big swing from a freshman, that's one right there. 9-5 Charlotte.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, man, that's awesome. That's awesome, man. Just to see the energy of it. I think it was such a good moment, especially obviously being my first career home running, you know, in College Park. But, you know, just being able to experience that with this group of people, even though the game didn't go as we planned. And that's why we have tomorrow and Sunday, we have a doubleheader to bounce right back. And I know we're going to bounce back even stronger, but it was just a great moment. I kind of blacked out during the moment, though. I blacked out for sure. I was very, very hyped. Got a good pitch to hit, got a good slider, and just try to take advantage of it. And, you know, a good outcome happened. So I was happy, but on to the next. So
got to have that mentality. Well, where would you rank that among your favorite baseball memories, that home run?
Oh, man, it's up there. I think it's definitely top three. For one, it's a slider because it was a slider. I personally
hate sliders, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I have a saying that you can't make a living off of hitting a slider. You got to hit the fastball. But that's just my theory. That's funny. That's like a little inside joke. But, yeah, no, it's definitely up there. Again, just to be able to experience my first collegiate home run. I'm just blessed to be in a position to be able to do that. And I just give all the glory to God because a lot of people don't get to experience that. And I was able to experience that as a freshman. So it's a blessing. I don't take that for granted at all. But, yes, sir, it was a very exciting moment. My mom, I talked to my mom afterwards, my biggest fan and supporter, and she was – it made a lot of people happy. So, but yes, sir, on to the next.
Yeah. Well, I got to ask you a couple more things I'm interested about. Yeah. With that home run, like the second that game ends or after that game ends, is your mom the first person you're calling? And what was that conversation like with her?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mama Bear is the first person I talk to, on a daily basis. She's my biggest supporter and my biggest critic at the same time. So after every single game, she's the first person I call, no matter if it's a good game or a bad game. She always gives me corrections of what I could do better, but it's just all just out of love of her being able to just show me a way to push myself and to get better. But yeah, no, she was very, very happy. My grandma was very happy. I talked to my grandma about it and just a lot of my family members that were watching the game, like my uncles and, you know, and my aunts and my sisters. Even my sister's on vacation right now in Puerto Rico, and she texted me. She was crying. My little sister back home, she was very happy. So it was a good moment to just be able to relish and enjoy the moment. But, you know, just keeping the right mentality, saying on to the next, because obviously we didn't win, so that's the biggest thing, that's the biggest goal. So but no, I enjoyed the moment, but I'm ready, we're hungry. So
yeah. And did they get to watch that live, like you said, your uncles, your grandma, your sister, were they watching that when it happened?
Oh, absolutely. My grandma, my mom, my uncle, yes, they had on ESPN Plus. My mom was telling me that she was running around the house.
Oh my god!
My grandma was doing the hallelujah dance.
That's great.
My uncle Al was told me he was brought to tears. So it was it made me happy inside being able to just bring joy to them. But it was a great moment. So it was a really good moment for my family and I. So
yeah. And I know you're a big family guy, you know, and you can, I can hear just from you talking about, you know, your uncles, you know, your aunt, your sister, you know, Let's start with your mom. What does your mom mean to you for you to have her by your side your entire life?
Oh man, everything outside of my foundation with God. She's everything to me. And I am a huge family guy, so I've been around and, you know, had a lot of adversity in my life, but my mom's just always been right there. She's always been the one, even my grandma. I've been brought up in a household full of strong, will-minded Black women. And I think that's been, and obviously I've, you know, had great support system with, you know, the right coaches, the right uncles, and the right people in my corner. But yeah, my mom, she's always been that one. So I love my mom. I can't even put words in it to describe what my mom means to me. So it's a blessing to have her in my life.
Mm-hmm. And how is she, and really, how has your whole family been able to get you, you know, through adversity, through tough times, and really be that support system for you and help you get to where you are now?
Absolutely. I think it just goes back to how my mom, my grandma, and our family was just how we were brought up through our foundation with Lord Jesus Christ. Our foundation with, you know, keeping God first and knowing God is very, very huge in my life, and keeping faith and knowing that life isn't perfect. Life isn't peaches and cream 24/7. You're going to have ups and downs and valleys. And that's when your faith comes into play. And, you know, obviously you control what you can control. You work hard, you bust your butt, you stay humble, and you stay even keel through it all. And you know that everything else is going to fall in line, and God's going to, you know, make your path straight if you just give it to him. So I think foundation and faith, that's number one for sure.
Yeah, and going off of that, again, I know, and it just from talking with you now, the religion is a big part of your life. How has that played a role, you know, and similar to the family aspect, and gotten you to where you are today?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't be in this position without God. First and foremost, he's blessed me with the talents and the abilities to be where I am with baseball, and school, family, friends, relationships, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And just to be where I am. So I just give him all the glory, most importantly. But like I said, I think it just goes back to how I was brought up in within my household of always just keeping faith. And my grandma always preaching. I actually talked to my grandma today on the phone. And she was like, if you ever start to run out of faith, you better be the first. I better be the first one you call on speed dial. So it's just that type of dynamic. Like, faith has always been a huge part of my life. And I can't explain it, nor I can't describe it. But the way my life has turned out, you like, my God is a God like no other. So he's wonderful and great and fair and faithful and just. So I give it all to him for sure.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, you probably heard this before, you know, God works in mysterious ways. Everything happens for a reason. And going to your commitment to Maryland, you know, what brought you to Maryland? Why did you pick the University of Maryland?
Oh man, so first off, I was always surrounded by University of Maryland, even being a younger kid, you know, going to the games, because actually my mom went to University of Maryland for 1 year, for her first freshman year of college, but then that had nothing to do with that. But I just always been associated with the University of Maryland. I have a lot of family up there. I was always just been familiar with it, but most importantly, I went to a camp one day, and I just fell in love with the school every time, ever since I stepped foot on the field. I built a certain relationship with the coaches that I just can't explain. And it's just been a blessing and a great journey since the recruitment process with them. So it's been seriously just a blessing.
Mm-hmm. So. And how has your relationship been with Matt Swope? How did he reel you into Maryland? Because, of course, he's a hitting guru, and so many people love the way that he's helped them.
He's a huge factor in why I chose Maryland, and obviously he is a hitting guru and a great hitting coach and a great head coach, but it's more than that to him. He develops young men on and off the field, and I think that's the biggest thing. He's very, very, very serious about relationships and building relationships with players, and he's he's really one of the kind in the Division I baseball world. It's not many like him, where you get to build relationships with your coaches like that, not just within baseball, but outside of baseball, teaching you how to be a good father, a good dad, a good husband one day. So he's great, man. He's great. So.
And going off that, what are some of the biggest lessons, whether it's baseball or non-baseball related, that he's taught you in your short time here?
Oh yeah, this is easy. First off, how to deal with failure again, because obviously at this level, especially with baseball is a game of failure in itself. So, and then at this level, you're going to fail even more than what you're already used to. So really staying process oriented with everything you do. I think that's the biggest thing, and really, really staying true to the process and really trusting the process. I think a lot of people say that because it's very cliche, but don't know how to does it. But a lot of people say that because it's very cliche, but doesn't know how to put it into action. And I feel like he's taught the whole program, you know, with motor preferences and this and that, how to trust the process and stay process oriented and actually put that into action. So I think, and that's bigger than hitting. That goes within how we deal with homework, school, relationships outside of, you know, family and friends. So it's big.
Yeah, and talking about the motor preferences, had you heard of that before you came to Maryland? What was, you know, what was that conversation like about learning about it and implementing it into your game?
So, oh yeah. So before I came to Maryland, it wasn't like I heard about it, but I didn't know too much about it. But like once I came into the fall and we hit the ground running, it was takeoff season by then. I learned a lot of information, learned about my body, the way my body wants to move, and especially in a sport where everybody is taught in such a cookie cutter way, but that's not how everybody has a different brain. Everybody has a different brain coordination with your body. So to be taught to the way your body wants to move and put your body in the best and most efficient and energy saving way as possible to move the most natural, it's been a great journey and process for me, and I'm still learning daily. So it's been a great process so far.
And going back to something you talked about, you know, at this level at college, you know, you're failing more than you were in high school. You know, you're not getting as many hits. You're not dominating like you were in high school. We're going to talk about Combine Academy, where you went to school, in a second. But, you know, what's that process like, trying to learn to live with failure, to play with failure, because you're not going to be hitting 400 here?
Yeah, I think it's huge about, you know, what Coach Schultz preaches about knowing your role, and, you know, just staying process oriented with everything. If you get caught up in the results, that's when you're going to be mind effed, and you can't do that, especially at this level. It's more about the process. Did I take balls? Did I swing at strikes? Am I swinging at good pitches to hit in the damage zone with less than two strikes? That type of thing. So if you stay with the process, the results are going to come organically. And I think that's the biggest thing. And it's just continue to learn that and trust in that. So, yes, sir.
And so going back to Combine Academy, for those who aren't familiar, and you can correct me if this is wrong, but it's a top international boarding school and professional sports performance center. What was your time like there, you know, being at this place where it's so athletically oriented?
Yeah. I think it was very good for me, especially my senior year. It's not a lot. It's in a little place in town called Lincolnton. Everybody says it's right outside of Charlotte, though. So it's in Lincolnton, North Carolina. And when I tell you that's in the sticks, like it's straight. It's nothing out there. So it was a really good place for me, especially just focus. I built a lot of great relationships with a lot of great people down there, and they're doing their thing in college ball. I have a lot of friends, family down there that I still keep in touch with. But yeah, no, it was really great for my developmental, you know, and mental process to be down there, and really just to focus. I think that was the biggest part, and really helped me prepare for this next level, not just physically, but mentally. I think that's the biggest switch.
And what was that like? Like, what was a daily day for you, you know, because you still have to take classes, of course, and it's also, you know, you're doing all this with baseball. So what was like a typical day at Combine Academy?
Yeah, so we'll wake up, Yeah. Okay. So we'll wake up. I would get my early work, and we'll get early work in the morning. Usually, it'll be infield, and after that, we'll have classes, and this would probably be from maybe 9 to 12. Then right after 12, we have lunch from like 12 to 1. Then practice at 1, from maybe a couple hours. So say practice from like 1 to 3. Then you guys go straight to lift. Then so you lift 3 to 5. Then right after that, recover, eat, go to a dinner. If you have homework, you gotta do homework, and then usually we'll obviously be in there back around 7 to 8 for more extra work. So yeah, it was just really, and that was an every single day process. School baseball, school baseball, school baseball. So it really helped me prepare for this next level, and really just to limit the distractions, because it is a lot of distractions, especially at the collegiate level. You can get really mixed up in the wrong type of thing. So it really just helped me. It was like a year in advance of preparing. So it helped me a lot.
So did you go there for was it just one season? Was it your senior year?
So yes, it was just one season. So it was my senior year.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was just one season. Yes, sir.
And how did you find out about Combine? Why Combine Academy? Why'd you end up picking it?
So actually, one of my good friends, and he's like family to me, Justin Best. His father, Unc, which is Rick Best, he's a uncle to me. Actually, we've been good friends for a while now. And Combine a year before me. And obviously, I played with Justin Best. Was a really good prospect out of high school. He's at Florida State, playing at Florida State right now, playing baseball. He's a freshman. And I've always stayed in contact with Justin, and we're at some event, East Coast. We're at East Coast Pro this summer, and Uncle Rick talked to my mom about Combine, about me coming to Combine, especially it helped me to get more exposure down south. It really just continues to hone in on my developmental, mentally and physically with the game. So really through Uncle Rick and Justin Best really got me down there, for sure. So that's how the process started with that.
That's great. Shout out to Uncle Rick and Justin Vest. I love
There
it.
we go. There we go. And then the crazy thing is, our coach last year actually got picked up again. He was a freaking athlete. Alex, you can look at him, Alex Spees, probably 6'6", slim, but throws like 102 with a 93 mile per hour slider. He was our head coach. But the Texas Rangers re-signed him again. So he actually made his debut in the summer sometime. I can't remember though. So he was a great dude too. So that was another reason.
What'd you say his name was? Alex what?
Alex Spees, you can
Alex
look
Spees.
him
So
up.
did he get picked up by the Rangers like during your guys' season?
Yeah. So
Really?
what happened was, Coach Spees got drafted out of high school a couple years ago in the second round, and he was in high school throwing 100. He got drafted by the Texas Rangers out of high school throwing 100. I believe he got hurt after a couple of years, took a year off, came to Combine, coached us for a couple of months, and then got re-signed and re-picked up, and is playing in the MLB now. So it's crazy, yeah. And it was really, really cool, just picking his brain. Because he's been in where obviously every baseball player's dream is to go, is the highest level. So it was really just picking his brain throughout the fall and when he was our coach. So great, great dude. So
And last thing about Combine, you mentioned it's near Charlotte. So did you get anybody or is anybody coming to the Sun when this is being listened to these series, this games would have already happened, but is anybody coming tomorrow from Combine? Did you let them know that you're in the area?
actually, yeah, speaking of, Uncle Rick is gonna come out.
Hey, there we go.
Uncle Rick texted me today, so he's coming out. So he was like, "Nephew, when's the game?" So I get to see him tomorrow. I'll give him a big hug, and it'll be great. I would love to see him, so it'd be great to see him tomorrow. Wish I could see my boy JB, but he's playing down in Florida right now. So, but yeah, no, I get to see Uncle Rick tomorrow. So, yes, sir.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. I know
Yeah.
another one of your big interests, besides baseball, is really music, R&B and soul. How did you get into that? And what part of a life does does music play?
Music is like a huge part of my life. Like if you actually like look at like I don't think I go anywhere without my air like my headphones. And if I'm like even when I'm studying, doing homework, I'm always listening to music. If I'm working out by myself, listening to music. It's I think it's just a way of like I like feeling in a like a flow state kind of zone. Mm-hmm. And music, I just love music, man. If I wasn't doing something with baseball, I'd probably be with music. So I love music. And even just like breaking down like soul samples and beats and different instrumentals within like music. So it's cool. So
yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I love listening to music in the fact that, yeah, listening to all the instruments that they're playing a part. And like when you put your headphones on or AirPods and really listen closely and you hear all the sounds that are happening, like I love that too.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, no doubt, no doubt. That's why I love soulful rap too, where they take like an old school R&B beat or instrumental and put it to like maybe like J. Cole or Drake rapping, something like that. It sounds smooth. So it's really dope. It's really dope.
That's great. So who are some of your favorite R&B or soul artists? Favorite artists in general.
Oh man, so I'm kind of like an old man when I listen to music. I'm around my uncles a lot when I'm back home, even my grandma and my mom. So I don't have like a favorite, but a lot of what I'm listening to right now, I could definitely say the OJs, Luther Vandross, obviously Michael Jackson. He's one of the greatest. And if I could give you two more, SWV, I've listened to them a lot. And I've been playing Nelly a lot. I don't know why. I've been playing Nelly a lot. I don't know. So, but yeah, no, that's probably my top five right now. So a lot of Luther Vandross, a lot of the OJs, a lot of Michael Jackson. So yeah, no, I've been just chilling right now. So
I love that. So it's kind of like, would you consider yourself like an old soul in other ways, or is it mainly just music?
Nah, yeah, it's mainly music. It is mainly music, but people tell me I kind of have an old soul and just like the way I move or function. Or sometimes people say I talk like an unk or like it's the type of lingo I say or use. So yeah, but not really my music. I really have an old soul. I'm around my grandma, my mom, my uncles a lot. And it just, I don't know, R&B and soul just hits different for me. I don't know. That's how music is just vibing to me. I don't know. So
do you got like a pre-game playlist? Like what are some of the go-tos before games?
Ooh, gospel music, that's one for sure. I always listen to Brighter Day by Kirk Franklin. Before every game, I always like even when I wake up, that's like the first song I would listen to, Brighter Day by Kirk Franklin. And then I would just take a deep dive and I have an old school rap playlist and an old school R&B playlist. So it's between the two of those, for sure. I don't like to be so amped up before games. I like to be in like a more like a calm state. And just let like just kind of flowing. So I listen to a lot of calming music before games. I know like a lot of other people listen to hype up music and stuff like that, but I listen to a lot of calm flow state music.
I love that. That's awesome. Ed, going back, you mentioned the gospel music, and I meant to ask you this before when we were talking about religion. You know, religion's a big part of your life, and I know it is for a few other guys on the team. And you guys have Bible studies as well. I know Elijah helps lead those. What's that like? You know, what are you guys doing kind of as a team and like a couple of you guys to kind of bond over religion, you know, with those Bible studies and things like that?
Yeah, no, it's been great. We've been adding more and more guys every week, you know, with FCA and, you know, with Campus Outreach, Mr. Matt and Mr. Jeff, the ones who help us lead the Bible study with Elijah, myself, Chris, EJ, Omar, Randy, and, you know, pretty much a lot of the guys. It's been great. It's been great, you know, to have that fellowship with one another. It's in that foundation to find identity in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. It's awesome, man. It's awesome. So it's been huge, and we hope we continue to just grow that fellowship within our team, and you know, hopefully the whole campus. So that's been big for sure.
One thing that really stuck out ever since we met, and same thing with Chris Akopian, we were talking before the podcast, is you guys seem just so mature beyond your years. You don't seem like a freshman. Where do you think you picked that up from and kind of carry yourself, you know, more like a senior than a freshman?
Thank you. That means a lot. Yeah, Chris is a great dude. I'm very mature. he's a great kid, great dude. My thing is our backgrounds and, you know, the type of households that we've came from. Like, our parents are obviously great. We were raised the right way, very respectful. And when I tell you, my mom and the people I've been around do not play about manners. My mom hears me calling an adult without ma'am or yes, sir, or no, ma'am. She would lighten to me. So my mom does not play about that. So I just think it just goes back to our foundation.
That's great. And I can tell that. I mean, you've even, and this like blows me away, and I love this, don't change. Even you said over text to me, Mr. Aaron. I mean, like, there is no other college student that is saying that, nonetheless a freshman. So big props to you, and tell your mom that she did a great job raising you, because I mean, yeah, like, and I can tell you got great manners. So that's just awesome.
Thank you. Well, that means a lot. She's not going to take that lightly. So I will. Yeah. I will. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then the other interest I know, another big interest of yours is dancing. I know you said, you know, you have a really good Dougie. So let me ask you, what are some of your favorite dance moves and what got you into dance?
Well, so obviously that goes back to me being a big family guy. And I have, so my grandmother has nine or eight grandchildren. So, and we're very close in age. So it'll be like me, my sisters, my cousins, we'll all, like, every Sunday, we'll all used to meet up at my grandma and papa's house, and we'll turn on the TV. We'll have dance competitions, dance battles to the Dougie, the Stanky Leg, the Jerk. And, you know, also we used to play that game on the Wii where it was like Just Dance on the Wii, the Jackson version. So we used to kill it in that. I think it just goes back to being having that big family atmosphere, you know, just having dance battles all the time, goofing around with my sisters, my cousins. I have a good Dougie. I can break it out sometimes for you though. I will.
Oh yeah, definitely. After you hit another huge home run, hopefully this time to win the game, that's, you gotta right. Break out that Dougie back in the headed back to the dugout. I gotta see the Dougie from you.
Yes, sir. We got you. We're gonna make it happen.
That's great. Awesome, Jordan. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know this is our odd off day on the Saturday because the doubleheader tomorrow, but really appreciate it. Again, you know, your mom's done a great job raising you. You're a heck of a guy, both on and off the field. So thanks so much for taking some time with me. I think the listeners will enjoy learning a little more about Jordan Crossland.
Thank you. No, thank you for having me and taking the time out of your day. So it's much appreciated. So I thank you so much. Definitely. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And that's a great interview right there. Great to hear from Jordan, learning a little bit more about him. And Aaron is kudos to you, Aaron. Always put together great interviews and talking about some stuff with the players and the coaches that we don't know and the fans don't know.
And especially with these newer guys too. It's such a new team, and you know, get an inside look on these guys. And Jordan's a great guy to get an inside look on. Just an incredible guy. Who's just a really fun guy to be around. Obviously, we haven't been around him a ton, but the limited interaction we've had with him, he's, you know,
extremely respectful. Love talking to him. And he's going to play a big role for Maryland, not only later on this season, but in the years to come, wearing that number 4 on the front and back of his jersey for the Dirty Terps. Is that going to do it, Jack?
No.
No.
It's not going to do it.
It's not
because we
do
have
it.
A special announcement. We've been seeing the chat. We read the chat, and we've been getting some compliments, and I should direct these compliments to Nate Schwartz because he was the one who, and people in the past as well, who've curated all this. We appreciate your comments on our music that we play during the commercial breaks, so we are happy to announce that the MBN Spotify playlist is now live. All of the music that you hear on our broadcast, you can now listen to in one playlist. And we will tweet that out a couple hours after this goes live, just so we have, you know, so people can be surprised.
Yeah.
That's about as good of a surprise as you can ask for, in my opinion.
Yes, I spent a lot of time trying to overhaul the file for that we use to play all the commercials and stuff, whether it's the player tags, the music that we use. Still got to update some of the promos in there and stuff with the website. We'll get to that eventually, but I think this is going to be good to see all the music in one spot. I've got it all in one spot on my computer, so I'll just transfer it over to the Spotify, SoundCloud playlist, wherever we want to do.
Yeah, if we find an Apple Music user, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, but we saw it in the chat yesterday for the Mount St. Mary's game that there were some people that were interested in seeing a playlist for all the music that we play, and here we go.
Why not?
We read everything, we listen, and we try to accommodate, and this is a perfect way of doing that. Now I think
we're done.
Now we're good.
No more surprises. Maybe next week there's a surprise. I don't know. 99 next week.
99 next week. It's actually going to have to be on Zoom instead of in studio.
Yeah,
because
I forgot about that.
We will be on spring break. The podcast lab that we use will not be available to us over the break, so we'll have to do it on Zoom, and then we'll be back in studio for the big one, episode 100, coming up in a couple weeks. That'll be ahead of the Michigan series on the road, and like we said, we still don't know like exactly what we're going to do yet. We've got some ideas brewing, but...
And they're fun ideas.
They are fun ideas.
This is going to be one, if our ideas pan out, this is going to be one you're going to want to tune into.
Yeah. We're excited about it. We can't wait to get to 100. But for now, this has been episode 98 of the Maryland Baseball Network podcast. For Aaron and Jack, I'm Nathan Schwartz. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.